Welcome to another episode of the Gay Bar Archive Show, where we explore gay history one bar at a time. I'm your host, Art Smith, and our guest today is Cuban-American actor and producer and star of the new Boy Culture series, Jason Caceres. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. You're kind of a hot commodity right now. Got a lot going on. I looked at your IMDb and it's got like, 500 entries on it. I was getting dizzy.
Yeah, there's quite a bit on there. It's funny that you brought up IMDb actually, because I looked at it recently and I was like, whoa, how did it, 40 what now? How did that jump? Like, sometimes I'll like scroll through it and I'm like, oh, that's right. I did do that. Yeah.
So, as you know, this project is mostly about recording memories and stories of gay bars, mostly ones that are gone by. And I know that you're not a big bar fly, but if I remember correctly.
I've got a little glass of wine, came prepared for the occasion.
All right, then. So I know you're not a big bar fly. You don't go to a lot of bars. But if I'm not mistaken, your first gay bar experience was at a pretty impressive club. Why don't you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, so I don't remember exactly how old I was. I was either 17 or 18. My best friend at the time, her name was Laura, love her. We've kind of lost touch throughout the years, but we actually reconnected pretty recently. So there's like no bad blood. I say like best friend at the time, just because she was my best friend at the time. Her name was Laura, is Laura. I had never gone to a gay bar ever before in my entire life. And not because like I wasn't out or anything, just because I didn't really go to those kind of venues. Cause I've been out for a pretty long time. I came out very early in my life. So we were actually supposed to all hang out. Myself, Laura, our other friends, Becca and Kat, were supposed to hang out somewhere. I don't know what happened. It fell through. Laura and I were just in my car trying to come up with something to do. And it was actually her idea. She was like, well, I've gone to Discoteca a few times before. And I was like, what's that? She's like, well, it's a gay club. Not sure if you'd want to go. And I was like, oh, am I dressed for the occasion? Like, is this something I can do? Like, what should we go? Is there a cover? Will they let me in? I'm not 21. So she had called one of her friends who was 21. Got me an ID, as one does, and we showed up, and they did not think twice. They let me in. They barely looked at it, and that was my first club experience. Was at Discoteca, which was a massive gay club in Miami Beach. No, downtown Miami, not Miami Beach. And it was such a wonderful experience. I mean, we got to skip the entire line. Didn't have to wait to get in, didn't have to pay a cover. We just walked right in. She didn't know anybody either. She was like, I can guarantee you if we just show up and walk to the front and pretend like we don't know what we're doing, they'll just let us in. I was like, are you sure? I remember my outfit to this day because it was so terrible. There was this trend during that time where you would layer polo shirts on top of each other and wear baggy jeans, not to date myself, but that was the trend at the time, if you can put two and two together. And I was wearing a white polo shirt with brown lines. So under it, I layered a bright yellow polo shirt so you could see the collar sticking out, and then had an undershirt under that also. So there was three layers and a full on baggy jeans. It was a lot. The layers came off slowly throughout the night. It was very, very hot in there.
I'm not surprised. That's a lot of clothing for Miami bars anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought I was like the flyest thing in the room. I was like, wow, this is, I'm so trendy. But then I got in and everybody was like shirtless in booty shorts. And I'm like, wow, I am overdressed for the occasion. Except for the drag queens who were fabulously dressed. But it was such a great time. I had a great time with her. She was very protective. She stayed with me the entire night. We did get a lot of free drinks. It was her idea, not mine. I did not know what I was doing, but she would kind of present me to people at the bar and be like, this is his first time. So of course, naturally, people would turn around and be like, what are you drinking? And I'm like, I don't know, I'm 17. But I got in with a fake ID. Not that I was announcing that, but you get my drift.
Yeah.
So I didn't pay for a single drink, had a great time. And then she drove home.
Well, that's good. Well, we're going to, I'm going to show a few pictures of Discoteca for the people that haven't been there. Discoteca, it was owned by a friend of mine, by the way, Joe Marcella, who closed it. I'm sorry?
I don't think I ever met him, but that's super cool.
He was definitely there frequently. And he closed it when they, I guess, knocked the building down to do whatever they did on that block. And after that, they opened up Heart, which was not too far from there. But Discoteca was part of a complex that was called Mecca. And it was very South Beach club style, but it was in downtown Miami. It was an 18 and up club. It was open 24 hours a day on the weekend. And it had a very eclectic clientele, everything from weirdos, freaks, party kids, oddballs, gays, lesbians, drag queens, transsexual, everybody was in there. And it was about 30,000 square feet. So it was a gigantic bar. I mean, that must have really blown your mind to walk in there and see this amazing place that not only was, you know, such a fabulous place to go party with your friends, but that you were accepted as being gay in there. It wasn't like you were, you know, at the Paris Opera House and you had to act all proper. It's quite the experience.
I mean, it was definitely mind-blowing. I had been to other clubs growing up in Miami because, I mean, it is Miami. I think the first club I ever went to, I was 14, and it was called Space. I'm not sure if it's still open. And it was like a massive straight people club. It was like three stories tall. It was huge. And Miami's generally very accepting, so I didn't feel like I struggled as much as other people may have with self-acceptance and tolerance and identity. But that being said, that was the first time I had seen so many gay queer people in the same room at the same time and spread out between, I think if I remember correctly, you walked in, there was an outdoor bar. And if you kept going straight, there was the hip hop room. But if you turned right, it was the dance house techno room. And then past that, there was kind of like an R&B, like slow vibe kind of room. So it's a massive complex.
Yeah, and it was open for, I think, 8 or 10 years and pretty popular until you had to move because they knocked down the building. So, but it was quite the experience. And, you know, I've heard Joe talk about it before, and he still misses it. He still, in fact, when I put posts up about Mecca or Discoteca online, it's amazing to me how many people respond to it and go, oh, my God, I miss that so much. I wish it would come back. But, alas, it's not there.
Now, there was another, definitely my experience.
Now, there was another nightclub that you went to in Miami also that was a very high-energy kind of disco vibe club, but it was mostly Latino, from what I understand. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. It was called Azúcar, which is Spanish for sugar, probably derived from a very famous Afro-Cuban singer, Celia Cruz, who would scream Azúcar in all of her songs. So it was that kind of vibe. I don't remember exactly where it was located. Because it was quite a few years ago. But it was much more of like a local bar with a little bit of a dance floor, so not necessarily a club, but it was more of a local vibe. I went there a few times. I would take some of my dates there as a first date, because I knew it was like one of the only places where we could just like get to know each other openly and be ourselves and like maybe dance a little or hold hands if the night went that way, or maybe steal a kiss here and there. So I only went a few times, but it was a great, great club, great bar. Was it 18 and over also? I don't remember. I was definitely under 21.
I'm not sure. I'll have to look into that. I don't know if it was 18 and up or if they just thought you were so cute that they wanted to let you in and not care how old you were.
I mean, I did hold on to my best friend's ID for a very long time. So I wouldn't put it past me if I had used that to get in, if it wasn't 18 and over. But something tells me that it was 18 and over, because there's no way that all of my dates also had a fake ID.
Right. Now, how did that experience compare to Discoteca? Was the energy similar? Was it, I know it was a smaller club, but was it similar in the general feel of the bar to the way Discoteca was, or was it different because it was kind of focused on Latino, gay community?
Yeah, I would say it was kind of different, in the way where like Discoteca is kind of like a Disneyland of queer people, where there was like, you know, people of all kind of like subcategories in the mix, and it was massive, so the capacity was much, much larger. Azucar was kind of more like the county youth fair in comparison to Disneyland, where it's still a great time, but much less people, caters to a very specific demographic, being queer Latinos. So the music was always a lot of fun, but definitely a completely different vibe. It was not kind of like circuity in any way. It was much more like reggaeton and salsa and merengue. So lots of better dancing, I would say. Less people. It was never really crowded. It was much more homey than Discoteca was.
Now, there was also, from what I've seen in the research that I've done, there was one drag queen there that I've seen perform in several video clips on YouTube and elsewhere, who almost seemed to be like a comedy drag queen. She had like buck teeth and kind of really funky hair, but trying to look a little like, I don't know, like Charo meets Howdy Doody. It was a really strange. Do you remember any of that at all? Was there like comedy drag or serious drag, or do you remember any drag?
There was drag. There was definitely drag for sure. I don't really have a specific memory of the comedy queen that you're referring to. I do have a few memories of like TP Lords, Sasha Lords performing. I got kind of close to the Lords family in Florida. I'm still in touch with some of them. I was never like inducted formally or anything. Wasn't, as you mentioned, I'm not really kind of like a barfly. I wasn't in that world, but the founder of the Lords family, Alexis Lords, was very, very nice and friendly to me. Always kind of took care of me when he saw me out and about, never let me like stray or like, you know, do anything weird. If he knew something was up with some person who was trying to talk to me, he'd be like, no, absolutely not. You're not part of, you know, my family, but I'm still going to treat you like such. And I was like, oh, great. So I do remember Sasha Lords and TP Lords being performers at Azucar. I think they performed a few times at Discoteca. The one drag queen who really stood out to me was, her name is Milancita. She's like an icon in Miami. She still performs. She pretty recently fully transitioned. I'm not sure if she still does drag. She's amazing. I met her on my first night at Discoteca, and she gave me drink tickets also, gave me her phone number. It was like very welcoming. If I ever needed anything, please reach out. She still to this day sometimes shares my stuff on Facebook congratulates me on any bookings or shows or anything that I'm on. I remember it fondly. It was a very warm and welcoming time in my coming out process. So I have a lot of fond memories of both of those places.
And if I'm not mistaken, Milan Sita, as a daytime profession, also does like graphic design or something.
God, you know her?
I know of her because you probably didn't know this, but the logos for Mecca and Discoteca and all those were all designed by Milan Sita. And if you look at some of the flyers for their events, her name appears on there numerous times. And I think they had several of her big birthday parties at Discoteca when they were still open.
Oh, yeah.
So she's pretty well tied with them, too. She's got a history in both places. So I've spoken to her. If I'm not mistaken, unlike you, she still sounds like maybe she just came off the boat. She has a very strong accent, which you managed to not have, probably through many years of voice training and whatever.
Well, I was born in the United States. I was first generation, born in the United States. Learned English as a second language because my parents are Cuban immigrants. But yeah, she still has very sexy, thick Latin accent. She calls everybody baby and sweetheart, and she has the biggest heart I've ever seen on the planet. Like, she will give you the dress off her back if you need it.
So since you now mentioned two drag queens, Alexis Lords and Milan Sita, I got to ask you this question. When you were hanging around them and, you know, they were kind of taking you under their wings, did they ever convince you to do drag?
No, I have never. No, I've done drag once for a short film. I was about to say I've never done drag, but I've done drag once for a short film, and it was about 3 years ago. I have never felt the need or urge to dress in drag. It's just not. My male presenting clothing is already very flamboyant as it is. I've just never felt comfortable in women's clothing. High heels look like they are torturous. I congratulate anybody who can spend longer than 30 minutes in them. It's not something that I would find appealing or something that would complete me in this stage in my life. Obviously, I can't speak for the future. People change. But no, I never really did drag.
Well, you know, who knows? Maybe the next movie will be about you and drag.
I mean, if it's for a movie, where's the contract? Where do I sign?
So I jokingly made the comment when I was interviewing Alan Broca a couple weeks ago, and we were discussing you at... in his interview a little bit, I jokingly made the comment that I think you have the world's largest collection of black lace shirts. And of course, today you're wearing a white lace shirt. Is that like a central theme in your closet? If I were to walk into your closet, would I see like tons of lace shirts?
Depends which door you open first. So I did see that interview. So I specifically pulled out a lace shirt for this one, just because I heard that comment. But I do have a lot of lace shirts. I have a lot of mesh, a lot of transparent shirts, see-through, and I only wear them for like events or like big special promotional occasions. Other than that, my wardrobe is pretty boring. Lots of my day-to-day wardrobe, I like to tell people, is kind of like dad on vacation. So I have a lot of Hawaiian shirts that I wear. It's very tacky. Brightly colored pants that I pair with the Hawaiian shirts. But I do, when I first started like promoting my films, and TV shows that I was on, I noticed that all the men look the same at these events. All the red carpet fashion is the same for men. So I specifically ventured out. I was like, what can I wear that would make a statement, bring some attention, but also represent my personality and who I am as a person, because our clothing is just another outlet for our artistry. And then I came upon this company called Kufandi on Amazon. I was like, oh, I'm kind of vibing with all of this. There's like a lot of mesh, lace, some leather, sequins, glitter, and it's male clothing that isn't just a boring tuxedo. So I started wearing those, and then they did really well on Instagram. So it's like, I need more. I need more validation from social media because I'm a millennial. And that's just kind of like how it evolved.
How does your personality today compare to like when you're 16, 17 years old, before you went out to your first, you know, first experience at discotheca? Were you as open and flamboyant and, you know, in your face with your fashion as you are now? Or I know you said the first time you went to discotheca, you were wearing layered polo shirts. So I'm guessing this came after that.
This did come after that. But I would say that my personality and clothing, what inspires me to pick my clothing options, has stayed relatively the same. I'm Cuban, which is already a flamboyant culture as it is. So there wasn't a lot of like venturing outside of my comfort zone. It's just that back then when I was 16, 17, in my mind, I thought layering polo shirts was like a cool fashion choice. Like, I'm going to stick out, because that's something you only saw on like television shows like 90210 or Lizzie McGuire, or I'm trying to think what shows were airing back then. One Tree Hill. Nobody actually layered their polos in real life. It's something you only saw in media as like an out there fashion choice. So it was like, I'm an out there fashion choice kind of person. I'm also going to layer polos. Not very functional. So I feel bad for those actors who had to do that for 8 hours a day, every day, back then. So I guess that kind of hasn't changed in the fact that, in the way that I will still kind of venture out and try to make a statement with my fashion. It's just that I feel now it's a little bit more put together, and a little bit more thought through than just like, I see this on television. It's on One Tree Hill and Chad Michael Murray's doing it, so I'm going to do it too. Now I kind of have it reflect my own personality instead of whatever actor is hot at the moment.
Right. And by embracing the, you know, the lace shirt concept, you've also kind of made that part of your own brand. You know, everybody has a certain thing that they do that is kind of expected of them on a regular basis, you know, that identifies them. You know, at the opposite end of the spectrum, Bruce Valanche was the one who went out to every Hollywood gala possible wearing graphic t-shirts, you know, some t-shirt with a big graphic design on it. Everybody else is in a stuffy tuxedo and black tie, and he's wearing, you know, a t-shirt. So everybody takes something to make their own identity, and that seems to work really well for you.
Yeah, he still does that. He came to a opening night of a play I did called Hit the Wall at the LGBTQ Center wearing a graphic t-shirt, and everybody else was, at the time, my fashion statement was weird bow ties. So I had like bow ties with like peacock feathers, or bow ties with like crystals, or a mirrored bow tie. Now it's lace, but he showed up in a t-shirt.
Yeah, he even told me that when I interviewed him, he was one of the first interviews I did in this series. And when I interviewed him, he actually told me that one of the Oscars programs or something that he was doing, he wore, you know, he's known for wearing t-shirts, and Bob Mackie actually made him a t-shirt. So he, Bob Mackie actually dressed Bruce Valanche for a formal Hollywood event, a red carpet event, which is kind of crazy.
That's awesome. I mean, I wish one day, maybe down the line, some big designer will designed a lace shirt specifically just for me.
There you go. So at some point after these experiences in the Miami Beach bars and the Miami downtown bars, and your acting career, I guess, maybe started to take off a little bit. Is that when you decided to move to the West Coast?
No, actually. I moved shortly after graduating with a Bachelor's of Fine Arts in Theater from Florida International University. There wasn't anything big specifically happening career-wise. In Miami, the major market is telenovelas, and that's not something that I wanted to pursue at the time. Now I'm open to it. Not something I wanted to pursue at the time, so I left simply because I graduated college, and the only two avenues that were viable at the time were either New York or Los Angeles. And being a warm-blooded Cuban-American who grew up in Miami, Florida, where 60 degrees was freezing, New York was not it. So I moved to Los Angeles instead.
Now, you were telling me that in Los Angeles, there's one bar that you've had some experience with, but it didn't come out of, you know, partying with friends or, you know, deciding to go out clubbing, but it was an offshoot of you playing kickball. So apparently you were on a gay kickball league in Los Angeles.
Yes. So I'm a very active person. So, which is probably why just like, you know, bar hopping and like sitting at a bar, it's a lot of fun, but I need to be moving and I need to be doing something in order to be like entertained, because I'm very fidgety. I have a lot of energy. So my husband now, fiance at the time, and I were looking for something to do with our free time. And we came upon the Varsity Gay Leagues, which is based out here in Los Angeles. They run a bunch of sports for queer men. They do kickball, bowling, tennis, I think soccer, swimming. They have a bunch of different team sports as a way to like meet people, do something active with your community. And it's sponsored by this, actually this bar also recently closed due to the pandemic. It was called Gym Bar, sponsored this league. So on Sundays, we would sometimes start at Gym Bar just because they sponsored us. So after the game, we'd start there. They gave the losing team a pitcher of beer as a consolation prize. So the losers got free alcohol. I don't know, it just made sense. So we'd start there, but then we'd always end at the Bayou because it was kind of like a local West Hollywood bar. I'm not sure if you've been out bar hopping in West Hollywood, but of course there's the Abbey, there's Rocco's now, Mickey's. They're all super touristy now.
Right.
Yeah, so they're not really like the local LA gay community. There's a lot of, which nothing wrong with it, a lot of tourists that come and like spectate. That's not what I like doing. I don't like to be made a spectacle of when I go out and drink, which like fine. Some people come to LA for a week and they want to go to the Abbey because it's famous. That's great. But the Bayou was kind of more low key. Just a one room kind of bar, had great happy hours, $4 well drinks. The appetizers were, I believe, anywhere from $5 to $6. So we'd get our losing pitcher of beer, because sometimes we lost on purpose, at Gym Bar, and then head over as soon as I was finished and spend maybe like $20 each on an endless amount of drinks and cheesy fries and a bunch of stuff. And we'd just like spend the entire, way too much time, the entire day at the Bayou. It was a good time. It was a good time. I kind of miss it. I don't think they're still doing it post-pandemic, for obvious reasons. But hopefully, I would like to eventually go back to playing kickball with Varsity Gay Leagues, because it was such a great way to connect with people in my community also.
Now, the Bayou is also kind of an anomaly in West Hollywood, because from what I remember, so many of the West Hollywood bars are all about, you know, it kind of reminds me of Dallas, it's all about attitude and appearance, and, you know, and Bayou, obviously the name implies this already, but it reminds me of bars from the French Quarter in New Orleans. Like, just that normal, come in any way you are, we don't care, we're not going to make it super fancy and elegant in here, just come in, have a good time. And obviously, you know, some of the artwork, even in the bar, is reminiscent of that whole, you know, French Quarter look. Yeah. So it does kind of stick out from other bars in West Hollywood.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of the bars / clubs in West Hollywood are very L.A. presenting, where you kind of have to dress like lace shirts and like nice, you know, clothing, and not necessarily like suit and tie because it's still a bar at the end of the day.
But fashion forward, and
fashion forward.
You can't wear beat up. You can't wear beat up loafers or whatever. You have to look like exactly. You just came out of a fashion show or something.
Exactly. They kind of tend to lean that way, and they all have like great lighting and, you know, disco balls and go-go boys up on stages, where the Bayou is literally like a one room hole in the wall. We would show up with like our gym shorts and our tattered up sneakers and not smelling the best because we just played kickball. And they did have like that big Mardi Gras kind of like mask decoration. The bathroom had just like, the walls were plastered with old pinups from like the 80s and 90s and celebrity quotes and photos, Polaroids of like celebrities that had been to the Bayou. And it was just so grounded is the only way I can explain it.
And that bar is still operating, isn't it? Bayou is still open.
I believe so. West Hollywood is a little odd at the moment, post-pandemic. Some places are open. Some places are open only certain days. Some places are only open on the sidewalk. There are definitely some bars that have closed down. Rage recently closed down due to the pandemic. I believe it's being taken over by Rocco's now as a second location.
How do you feel about that? What do you think is going to happen when Lance Bass puts his name on a gay bar in West Hollywood? Is it going to be another, you know, fan magnet, and every tourist in town is going to go there hoping to see either Lance or some other celebrity friend? And or is it going to be?
He's had Rocco's open for a few years now in West Hollywood, and it's right across where Rage used to be. And Rocco's is a great time, a little overpriced, but I mean, what can you expect? It's a great time. It's a fun daytime restaurant that eventually turns into a nightclub. They remove all the tables from inside. They put up these stages. They have the go-go boys. They have the great lighting. They have the videos. Rage was kind of, I never really liked Rage. Greatly enjoyed Rocco's. Rage was kind of like, and maybe it's because I was older when I moved out here, but Rage was an 18 and over club. They had a lot of like 18-year-old themed nights, like a Game Boy night. It was just, which is fine for the 18-year-olds. Not really my vibe, you know? Especially since I moved out here in my mid to late 20s. Kind of would like to, nothing against, I mean, I would go out bar hopping at 18 also, but I also like partaking with people of my own age demographic. So I never really went to Rage. I can only expect it to now mirror what Rocco's already is, just at a different tier, you know, maybe turned up a little bit more.
Yeah. The early press releases I saw about it kind of claim that it's going to be, you know, the most fabulous bar in the country. I don't know what's going to make it fabulous. It's not huge. The space isn't anywhere near what you're familiar with from like Discoteca or Studio One, which used to be the big club there. But I don't know what Lance has up his sleeve. I haven't been able to talk to him. I interviewed him years ago, just before he and Michael got married. But I have not talked to him recently, so I don't know any of the inside scoop on what's going on there. But I'm really excited that he's doing something. because I think that's an important part of our culture, the gay culture, you know, to have queer bars that are opening up now after having so many that have closed down, either because of COVID or because of lack of interest or because of gentrification. It's nice to know that somebody who is a, you know, visible face in our community is actually going to do something to open a new one that may get some good, you know, positive media attention and maybe inspire other people to open bars, you know, down the road. So I'm glad that he's doing it. I'm curious to see what it's going to be like once it gets underway.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, he seems to be on the up and up lately. I mean, everything he touches turns to gold. So I'm really excited to see what it becomes. You're right. It's not a huge space. It's two stories, which is, you know, I guess in Los Angeles, that is a big space because everything here is so expensive and small. But I'm excited to see what it becomes, knowing that Rocco's is still open across the street. So what is it? Is it going to be Rocco's 2? I don't know. I'm looking forward to
it.
Yeah.
I guess we will find out. So you were talking about how Rage was such a, like a teen magnet, and had this younger crowd, but I can't help but notice, we're going to talk in a minute about your professional career, but for people who are not particularly familiar with your, you know, broad scope of work that you've done and all the different shows and movies and things that you've been in, I looked at the list on IMDb of some of the characters' descriptions that you played. And this is just a partial list, but Go-Go Boy, mm-hmm. Sex Monster, Ultimate Fanboy, mm-hmm. Boy Toy, Tanner, which I guess is somebody who's tanning, sunbathing?
It's a name.
Oh, Tanner was a person's name. Innocent Sophomore, Twink, Pledge, and most recently, Chase with a Y, who is an escort.
Yes.
So you've kind of been pegged in that twink category in a lot of the roles that you've done so far. That kind of. Well, let's take a break for a second and show the trailer to the Boy Culture series so everybody can get an idea of what your character is like, and then we'll come back and talk about your career.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys are willing to pay more for a slightly less hot guy if they have a fantasy built up around you. What social media do you do?
Facebook.
Every door requires a different fantasy. So until you know what that is, be a blank canvas.
What's your name?
Call me X.
I usually like guys that are older than 45.
He told you I was 45?
Can't resist the power!
We're horny.
Yeah.
So are you cool with just basically being our dildo?
You want to go halves on the stripper? I hear they're all hustlers.
You heard right.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Chase. With a Y. As in, why don't you join us?
You were born to be abused.
Yes, sir. Tell me how nasty I am. Oh.
X.
My timing's just off.
My timing's fine. Your timing is off. This is not going to work if you don't respect the boundaries.
Everything's so public these days. I just want something to be private for a change.
I want to have sex. It's my choice.
It's just, I think you should be doing it with someone your own age.
It doesn't take superhuman powers of perception to see you're denying yourself something because you think you don't deserve it.
Breaking up with you was a mistake. Let's figure this out together.
Can you do PayPal?
Of course.
We can?
Wasn't that great? Did you enjoy the clip?
I did.
So, how close is Chase to your personality, minus the escorting part, because we know that's not part of your...
Yeah. I'm not an escort, despite what I am constantly cast as. So please stop sending me messages, guys, to my DMs and asking me if I am, which does happen. I'm not an escort.
Well, you could always pull an X and give him an outrageous fee. Okay, it'll cost you $100,000 for an hour.
$100,000. Yeah, but then there would be that one person who's like, okay, where do I transfer it to?
Oops.
And I'm like, I have a conversation with my husband. Should I do it? I'm kidding. No, the answer is no. I would say that Chase, I don't think that I am similar to Chase in very many ways, to be honest, except for when it comes to confidence. That might be the only tying factor to his character and my personality, because Chase is very confident, as I like to think I am, but Chase is also, he knows what he wants. He uses his sexuality to get it, which there's nothing wrong with. And there's a little bit of a diabolical side to him as well. He's kind of manipulative. He uses people, so he's a people user, where I like to think I'm a people pleaser. So that's where we differ. As a person, I think I'm kind of like a child. I'm very silly. Self-deprecating, which Chase does not. He would never use any of his faults to make someone else laugh. I do that all the time. He's very good at honing into someone's insecurities and using that to his advantage, whereas I would never. I would feel really guilty doing that. So I don't think we're very similar in those aspects.
I had the pleasure of being able to watch the entire series as it exists right now this past weekend. It was finally playing at a film festival that was showing the whole collection. And so I think it was the Chicago Film Festival, maybe?
Yeah, Reading Fest?
Yeah, so I watched the entire thing. And, of course, I had seen the original movie many years ago. And I always thought that, you know, the X character was kind of a little odd. His personality, I don't know, was just a little strange to me. And it was interesting to see that in the new series, that's carried. It sounds like he could have been reading lines from the original show, the original movie. I mean, X has not changed as far as the way he approaches life or talks about his experiences much at all. Which is a good thing, because it's the whole concept is that this is a continuation of the original movie. I noticed that in one of the segments of Boy Culture, the series, you also have the pleasure of, interacting with an actor that you have sort of impersonated in the past. In one of the segments, Steve Grand is the focal character, and you actually played Steve Grand, the younger Steve Grand, in the story about Steve Grand. So
I did.
Was that like, working with him the first time, trying to be a mini him, and then working with him again?
So Steve Grand, and he wrote this fantastic post after the Reeling Film Festival in Chicago, where he mentioned our work in the past and made a comment about how no one should ever forget that he gave me my first job. And I laughed. I was like, it's true. Steve Grand gave me my first acting job when I had just moved to Los Angeles. I think I had been here not even 2 months, a month and a half. And I had seen this audition posting. They had a picture of the artist, and they were like, we're looking for a younger version of this artist for his music video. And I saw the picture and I was like, I can kind of see it. I think maybe, sure. Why not? So I sent in a picture, and they called me. They're like, you're a dead ringer. You look exactly like him. You have the same thick eyebrows. I'm like, oh, great. Thanks. Sure. So he gave me my first acting job. It was a 2-day shoot. I met him on the first day, obviously. He was like, wow, this is, you look exactly like me. And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I'm more attractive. I'm kidding. It was a joke. And it was, he was a very sweet, kind of shy. I don't know if he still is, but he was very shy. I was also very shy. He was blowing up. He had just come off of All American Boy, his first like major viral music video. And the media was like painting him as like the first openly gay country singer, first openly gay country singer. And I remember talking to him about it. And he was like, I'm not a country singer. I had one song that kind of sounded like country. I don't know why they keep saying it. And I was like, I don't know, man, just write it out. Take the press for what it is. So that was great. And then fast forward maybe 6 years later, and I'm doing this series, Boy Culture, the series, and they tell me that Steve Grand, this amazing artist we just got, I can't believe we got him. He's flying in from Chicago. And I was like, oh, who is it? Like, oh, Steve Grand. He's going to be one of the guest stars. And then I was like, oh my God, no way. I played Steve Grand at 15, even though we're the same age. This is so cool. So it kind of all came full circle where he gave me my first job on his project. I had nothing to do with casting him, but then he was a guest star on a project that I'm kind of like the series regular in. So it's a great full circle moment. And I'm really excited for him. I'm happy for all of his success. He's doing this Grand Access clothing line that, Steve, if you're watching this, I would love one of the bathing suits. Please send me one. I feel like there's enough history there where you can just like ship it to me. So, you know?
And of course, if he sends it to you, you're going to post a picture of it on Instagram, which a million people are going to see and get more press for him anyway.
Of course. So, Steve, hook it up, you know?
He's a great guy. I met him a few years ago. He was a Grand Marshal. I live in Tampa, Florida. And he was a Grand Marshal. You'd feel right at home here. There's a huge Cuban population in Tampa. But he was one of the Grand Marshals for the Tampa Pride Parade a few years ago. And I would interview all the Grand Marshals and the VIPs and everybody for a whole series of videos about Tampa Pride. And I interviewed him in the trailer where he was, you know, they set up for him to get changed before his performance. And it happened to be that Tampa Pride was on my birthday weekend. And when he found out in the middle of the interview, he started to sing happy birthday to me while I was standing there. And he's just such a nice guy, so friendly and down to earth. Just a real genuine guy. And
he really, he's a lot shyer than people would think. Also, how very Marilyn Monroe of him to just start singing happy birthday to you in the middle of an interview. But yeah, he's a sweetheart. And I wish him nothing but the best.
It was really kind of cool. So I know you've got a couple of other projects that you've been working on lately. What is coming up next for you? What should we look for after, you know, we explore the jasoncaceres.com website and find all the links to all the stuff that you've done? There are some really cool, I really enjoyed watching some of those little video clips of you doing all kinds of things on there. I mean, there's some great material on your website for people who really want to get an overview of what different kind of things you've done in your career. But what are you looking forward to? What comes up next after Boy Culture, the series?
Yeah, so I just shot a small role on this major Hulu show coming out soon called Pam and Tommy, which chronicles the life of Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee during their major sex tape scandal. Like, what can I say? During their major sex tape scandal. So I have a small role in that. I'm really excited for that to come out. I don't know when the release date is, but it'll be on Hulu. So major streaming platform. I also have really exciting news about a series called Demon Hunter that I am in. It's kind of like a queer horror anthology of sorts. It's Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets something very gay. Meets something very gay. So like a gay Buffy the Vampire Slayer is currently in talks to be picked up by a major streaming site. That's all I can say. But it's very funny, scary at some points, but also very sexy. I play a psychic go-go boy named Alejandro. So back to tie that back into me playing a lot of go-go boys. Not saying I'm being typecast, but it is what it is. so that's very exciting. And then I'm starting work on a new series in November called Open to It, which follows the lives of this gay couple who is in the process of figuring out whether an open relationship would work for them or not. And it's each episode tackles different stigmas, different relationship types, and kind of navigates that world a little bit. So we see this couple struggle through, should they do it or not, basically.
That sounds really interesting. And you've obviously got, you know, some connections with some people who are ingrained in the gay movie scene. I know with Alan Broca, I think everything he's ever done has been a gay production of some sort. Even starting going all the way back to Rick and Steve. You know, it's,
yeah.
Matthew Rettman has a little bit different portfolio, and he's done some, but if I'm not mistaken, didn't he write Encyclopedia Madonica? Wasn't that
he
one
did.
Of his? So
he did.
That's pretty gay, though. I guess that counts as gay.
Yeah, he also runs Encyclopedia Madonica, the Instagram. So definitely follow him there. But yeah, Matthew Rettman and Alan Broca are icons. And I'm just thrilled that I even got to be in the same room, let alone work with them. I joked about possibly another Eating Out movie and making me the star with Alan. He kind of chuckled and was like, sure, if someone wants to finance it. And then I was like, ah, ha, ha, not me, but if someone else wants to finance it, sure. And then there was a writer that I know that was like, I'll write it. So maybe.
And who ever knew there would be five Eating Outs to begin with?
Yeah, I mean, those movies played such an integral part in my, and I said this in a live interview with Alan sitting right next to me, and he audibly gasped. And I was like, oops, should I not have said that? I turned bright red right away. I was like, they did, though. They played an integral part in my sexual awakening as a teenager. So thanks, Alan.
Now, there's a few people out there. I also recently interviewed Todd Stevens, who did the movie Swan Song that just came out, and was also known for Edge of 17, which kind of mirrors your story a little bit, except it was in a small town in Sandusky, Ohio. High school senior, 17 years old, going into a gay bar. It's kind of refreshing to see that there are people who have been out there that have made a career out of it for not just a couple of years, but for decades, producing TV shows and movies that reflect gay life in some way other than the gay being, you know, the comic relief or the villain or something, you know, ancillary to the main story. And apparently with your career, you've done a number of projects that you portrayed a gay character. So that must feel good too.
I would say most, if not all, of my characters have kind of been in the queer world. Not all, definitely a large majority. But I think people are starting to realize that it's not a fad. We exist, we're here to stay, and we have relevant stories too, other than like coming out, getting kicked out, finding drugs and dying of AIDS, which is a very valid story. It happens way too often, but there are other stories that we can tell, and there are other forms of living a queer life that don't always have to be negative or comedic.
I agree. In fact, that's part of the reason that this project got started for me. I was reminiscing a couple of years ago about the first mega bar that I went to, which was a bar called Backstreet in Atlanta. And I remember when I walked in there, I was there with my boyfriend to celebrate New Year's weekend. We had traveled from Nashville to Atlanta for the weekend. And it was so amazing that we literally decided before we left Atlanta that we were moving to Atlanta. And we went out and rented an apartment, got the utilities turned on. I went to a job interview and got hired. And then we went back to Nashville. And the following weekend, we moved to Atlanta because of the bar. And I got to thinking about all those old bars that, you know, like you talking about Discoteca. That was an amazing experience. That was just mind-boggling to see a bar that big and that fabulous. And yet, what, 10 years later, nobody's going to remember it because it's not recorded. That part of our history was just abandoned. People want to talk about who is the activist or who is in the closet or, you know, who got killed because they were gay or what politics were going on. And the bar scene, which was such a big part of building our community, was getting left aside. So over the past year and a half, I've documented over 1,500 gay bars around the country that no longer exist. And the number keeps growing. But I'm really glad that you were able to talk about Discoteca because, you know, that's something that's relevant to people in your age group. And, you know, there are younger people that have been there. Some of the bars that closed 40 years ago, you'd have to be 60, 70 years old to even know what they were to begin with. So it's kind of nice to have some fresh blood in the mix too.
Yeah. And that's just mentioning the ones that have closed. Cause I mean, like Twist and Score were a huge part of, my college years. Also, I'm not sure if I'm sure you're familiar actually, with those two Miami Beach bars. Palace, obviously, still open. It's just moved locations. There's so many.
Well, and you know, in South Beach, you had the Warsaw Ballroom was an iconic one that used to exist before your time. Liquid was another one that was right there. Was it Sanctuary?
I'm not familiar with those.
There were several big bars that were very popular in Miami for quite a while. Miami's been known for having some pretty extravagant clubs.
And, oh, yeah.
So, but I'm glad you got to share some of that experience with us and tell us a little bit about, you know, the bars that you went to in your early years and to kind of enlighten us a little bit about what the scene was like in Miami and more recently your experiences in WeHo at Bayou, which sounds like a place I'll need to visit next time I go. So yeah, thank you for taking the time to talk to us about this. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
And that concludes another segment of the Gay Barchives podcast. You can find more podcasts at gaybarchives.com/podcast. We also have more information about this podcast and links to the other podcasts we have completed. We hope you enjoy your trip down memory lane.